Omaha Public Radio, KIOS-FM, presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's speaker will be Brent Bowen, director of the Aviation Institute at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and holder of the University of Nebraska Foundation Distinguished Professorship in Aviation in the School of Public Administration, where he is also the director of the Division of Aviation and Transportation Policy and Research. He'll talk about the recently released Airline Quality Ratings Report. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, May 24, 2007, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Hugh Cowden.
Good afternoon. My name is Hugh Cowden. I'm a member of the Omaha Press Club Education Committee. At least once a month, the Press Club sponsors an education forum that we think will be of interest to our members and to the community at large. You do not have to be a Press Club member to attend. The forums are open to everyone. Today, we are dealing with the nation's largest airlines. In recent years, the news media have been widely reporting the problems with air travel, problems with lost baggage, flight delays, overbooking, and so on. There is a great deal of anecdotal evidence from passengers about problems with air travel, but each year there is only one place to go for objective documentation of that evidence. That is the Airline Quality Rating Report, which examines the performance of America's largest airlines in comparative terms and which receives each year huge national coverage in the nation's print and broadcast media, with an audience estimated up to 75 million people. This year, the 17th annual report was released at a news conference in Washington, D.C. on April 2nd. The co-author of that report is with us today. He is Dr. Brent Bowen, the director of the Aviation Institute at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Dr. Bowen holds the University of Nebraska Foundation Distinguished Professorship in Aviation in the School of Public Administration at UNO, where he is also the director of the Division of Aviation and Transportation Policy and Research. He is a graduate faculty fellow in the University of Nebraska system, where he supervises the nation's only doctoral program specializing in aviation administration. Dr. Bowen earned his doctorate in higher education and aviation from Oklahoma State University and has more than 300 publications, papers, and program appearances. Will you please join me in welcoming our speaker today, Dr. Brent Bowen. And before he gets up here, I will say that there will be time for questions after he has finished speaking. So I would ask you to be writing the questions while you're reading, and somebody will be around to pick them up. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Bowen.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Bob and Sheila Runyon, good to see you. My neighbors just directly across the street from a recent move. Well, with that elaborate introduction, I don't guess I need to tell you anything about myself other than kind of where this airline quality rating story began. And what I thought I would do is kind of focus on the unique media element of it and how it got to be what it is today, which is a very large national press story considered to be probably the by one of the University of Nebraska media experts in Lincoln, considered to only be topped in media coverage. The only thing in a single day that would top it in media coverage is a Husker bowl game in terms of the mention of the University of Nebraska. We get fabulous coverage on the day of our press conference. As was mentioned, this has been done for 15 years, and for 14 of those 15 years, the release has generally been the first Monday in April at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. And that's about the same 15 years ago as the just after the first year that I entered higher education as a junior assistant professor at Wichita State University. And I was looking for a research topic, just something to publish in an obscure academic refereed journal that Dean of the Library Runyon used to collect hundreds of that are still covered with dust in the basement until they're all moved out this summer. I saw the trucks there today moving stuff out of the basement for renovation. But what happened was I was working at the National Institute for Aviation Research in Wichita, which is part of the university. And one of my duties as the business and education person there was to talk to the media whenever they came by. And so routinely when we had special research and we would send out a press release, we would get media calls, and sometimes reporters would come by to, you know, photo or do stories on research in our laboratories. And I would escort them around and show them our facilities. And maybe the third or fourth time, one of these reporters asked me, said, "Well, what are you doing in research, Dr. Bowen?" And I said, "Oh, I'm working on this idea, and it has something to do with measuring quality of service in the airline industry." And he said, "Well, that sounds interesting. What are you doing with that?" So I proceeded to tell him the academic part, using a model for measuring service quality that was developed at another university. I was attempting to apply it to the airline industry, and I had identified about 70 potential sources of data, and I'm analyzing this data to see if it will fit in this model, and if it does, it may produce a ranking of service quality among airlines. He said, "Oh, that would be an interesting story. Give me a call when it's done." So I worked on the first set of data that second semester as an academic. And I called the reporter when I was done and I was ready to send this article in to this obscure publication. And he came out and did a story about it and saw that I had developed a ranking for the U.S. major airlines. And at that time, there were very few. There were only about 9 airlines that were considered major airlines in 1990 or 91. And so he did a story on it on the local TV station in Wichita. The reporter's name, I still know him today, is Phil LeBeau. And he reports for MSNBC. He's their transportation reporter today. And it's very interesting. Phil sent a copy of his video to ABC News and to Good Morning America. And a producer at Good Morning America saw the local Wichita story and said, "We could do a national story on this." And so they invited me to New York to tape a story for Good Morning America. And I went to New York, was treated very well, got to meet Joan London, if any of you remember her. That was a real treat. And they did this story on Good Morning America. And as soon as the story aired, phone calls came in from everywhere, all across the country, newspapers, radio stations, TV stations, wanting copies of this research report, you know, hundreds or thousands of calls. It was just overwhelming. There was really no way to deal with it. And so the second year that I had the data developed, and I had asked a friend of mine at Wichita State, Dean Headley, to join and help me because this was a pretty big job, especially tracking the data across time, because it was monthly data, finally in 19 different categories, a lot of statistics. It's a weighted moving average mathematical formula that I apply to the data that exists, and that's the objectivity of it. It's not a survey. It's not a perception. It's a weighted average mathematical formula. So the second year, we did a press conference in Wichita. Again, you know, the local coverage begat national coverage, and I got invited to be on the Today Show. The same thing happened with Good Morning America. And finally, our media department in Wichita said, next year, we got to do something big. So we went to the National Press Club, booked a room there, and did a national press conference where all the nation's media is invited. And through their system, they, you know, put it in their scheduling book, day book, and all of the various networks come out. And it was overwhelming. The room wasn't quite as large as this one, and it was just filled with reporters and cameras that first year. Tons and tons of questions, 2 hours of questioning, and we've been doing it there ever since. And ever since that first year, I can safely say all of the nation's media turns out. It's consistently on all of the network news in the evening. It's consistently on the Associated Press, Knight Ritter, USA Today, you know, all of the local press. Everything's just fascinating and overwhelming. And again, the calls coming in from around the country, you know, from radio and TV, were really big and really consuming. So with technology, we added in things like audio recordings, so radio stations could call in and get recorded messages or a recording of the press conference. When internet video technology came along, we put up videos to download. We've done satellite linkages from UNO and local TV stations. And over the years, the questions at the press conference have gone down and down and down. You know, it used to be, who funds this study? You know, why do you do this study? And we get so many of the same reporters from the networks and whatnot. They don't have those questions anymore. They just, it's repeat customers. They keep coming back. And every now and then we get a new one. And it's kind of interesting. So the media thing just surged. It really surged from, you know, an obscure study to this. And it was interesting. Dean Runyon was there at the time. The very week that I came to Omaha to interview, which was about the third year after the airline quality rating came out, the Chronicle of Higher Education, which is to education like the Wall Street Journal is to business, right? Chronicle of Higher Education, yeah, he's shaking his head, yes. Came out with a feature story on me, not timed, but it happened to come out about the airline quality rating on the day I came here to interview. So I don't know if that helped or not, but it worked out. So the media coverage has been widespread. The 50 to 75 million people number comes from an analyst that did a study to look at the value of the airline quality rating to our university. And they estimated the 75 million just to be in the United States and North America alone. But I get clippings and internet articles from Europe and Asia and Australia. People I know around the world in aviation send me emails of things they've seen. It's amazing because stories, big stories about the U.S. airline industry are well published overseas. And we've done one of the biggest things that we ever did was Radio America, or it's the big kind of shortwave information agency thing that's broadcast around the world. That created more worldwide information, and their audience is estimated alone in the tens or hundreds of millions of people. I was just floored the year that they carried the entire broadcast live. We've also had the entire broadcast carried live by C-SPAN and CNN in the past. And it's estimated that today's value just to the University of Nebraska alone is at least $2.5 million of coverage from this single event. Our University of Nebraska investment in this study is less than a couple of thousand, $2,000 or $3,000. And combined between us and Wichita State University, the total investment is probably under $10,000 to generate $2-plus million in media coverage for each respective institution. It's just fascinating. This year, I did something different due to personal circumstances, and I didn't go to Washington and participate in the announcement at the National Press Club for the first time. My research partner, Dean Hadley, did it solo. And a side benefit to that is whenever, because I always go there, I'm never here to address the local media. And the local media, we routinely send out a pre-announcement a month before, hey, this is coming, do something, you know, talk to Brent Bowen before he leaves. Well, it's not interesting until they see it on the wire service or something, okay? So they're always calling the day of, I'm in Washington, no, I can't talk, you want to talk to me tomorrow? Nah, tomorrow it's old news. So today, this year, I stayed here, and our media representative at UNO got me spots on every TV news station and every radio news station on the day of the release. So our local coverage was very, very good here, electronic coverage. Our print coverage is always excellent here in Omaha because we provide a courtesy advance copy to the Omaha World Herald. And we've done that because we like for the local coverage to not be superseded by the national coverage. So we allow it to come out on like the last morning edition of the local paper, not the very early, I think they call it the Iowa edition or the Western Nebraska edition that comes out like at midnight. But it comes out in the late morning edition for the local metropolitan area. And we basically have a verbal agreement that we'll keep doing that as long as it keeps being on the front page. So they've kept that bargain for more than 10 years now, and it's worked worked very well. Now, I'll close and answer questions with kind of the parting comment, and I'm going to hand around some copies here of the home website that I developed just a couple of years ago for the airline quality rating. Oh, thank you, Gary. It's just kind of a, I didn't want to bring a large handout. I know how we hate to carry stuff around, but I just wanted to bring you something that had the internet address on it, which is aqr.aero. Not aqr.com or aqr.anything else. It's aqr.aero. And on this internet site, I have accumulated all 15 years of our reports, all of our past press releases, some articles about our coverage, and then most interestingly, you'll see on the side, you'll see a button that says AQR report card. And the AQR report card was an idea I had about 2 years ago where people kept asking, how has an airline changed over all these 15 years? And since our formula mathematically has had to change a little bit and be tweaked over the 15 years, you can't really do a 15-year ranking. So I did a visualization where you can click on an airline and see its former ranking. So across the chart, you'll click on, say, American Airlines, and you'll see how it's done for 15 years. You'll see its ups and downs and highs and lows. And that's the AQR report card button on the left of this screen. Now, the most interesting closing media fact I'll give you is that this year, since CNN, the Associated Press, and several other big national news services put AQR.AERO on the screen, within 2 days, we had over 250,000 people visit the website within 2 days. As a matter of fact, the website shut down for several hours because it was overloaded and had to be reloaded onto a higher capacity server. And while it was shut down during a couple of peak hours, probably missed tens of thousands. And then our most recent reports were downloaded at the rate of about $9,000 to $10,000. Someone said, you know, you used to charge to send out paper copies, you know, for shipping and handling. Bob probably remembers the Monographs series. We charged like $7. If I had $7 for each of these downloads, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it? So missed opportunity there. So that'll be my kind of closing media coverage and statement. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Brent. I might give you an indication of how much he loves airlines. I rode into Omaha with him like maybe a dozen, 14 years ago. We landed in Omaha, and he complained that the flight was very boring because there had not been any turbulence. I was sort of pleased with the flight myself. Brent, could you say something about the results of this year's report concerning the ratings of the airlines? I know that I think it was Hawaiian Airlines that came in first. Could you say something about that?
Yes, I will. Hawaiian Airlines just entered this major category, or the way that the U.S. Department of Transportation has redefined the category. And they entered and went immediately to number one. It's probably an anomaly because, you know, they have a lot of things going for them. They're very small. They just came into this category. They have a good business model. They have a good system. They deserve to be number one. The numbers prove it. But, you know, Hawaiian Airlines, we've had a lot of complaints before saying, well, how can you compare Southwest to American and so on and so forth? Well, the answer is, every airline has its advantages and disadvantages. Well, Hawaiian may have more because for its base. But still, the Department of Transportation defines it that way, and it is. What we've had over time, and here's kind of one of the parting thoughts on this year's ranking, is that the discount airlines like Southwest, Alaska, JetBlue are consistently at the top of the rankings now. Our former major carriers, the Uniteds, the Americans, you know, the long-standing categories, are consistently in the middle of the rankings. And the regional airlines, the commuters, you know, the very small planes, are always at the bottom, always at the bottom. And the main reason the AQR is important to the individual person, like us here today, is that, you know, you can go out and find all these numbers. Anybody can, and the airlines actually do it to see if we're doing our job right. They go find all these numbers and do it themselves. But you can go to one place now, or for the last 15 years, and look at one thing, this ranking, and see which airline am I most likely or have a higher probability of good service. Okay? That's all it is, a higher probability. And trust me, from having flown virtually all of them, you get bad service on all of them, okay? But you might encounter it more on Comair than you do on Southwest.
Could you say a little more about the specific criteria you use to rate these airlines?
Yes. As I mentioned, when I started the investigation, I identified about 70 to 80 criteria that could be utilized. And I had to come up with a basis to discriminate that down to a more usable figure. And in the beginning, it was 19 factors. Now it's 15 factors based upon data availability. And those factors are weighted by importance. So let's guess what's at the top of importance. Baggage handling, you know, how many bags are likely to get there on time with you, on-time performance of the airline, overbooking percentage, which means most flights are oversold, so some people get bumped off or asked to volunteer to get off, and customer complaints is the other big one that includes many things like pricing problems, registering a complaint about service, you know, anything. So those are the big ones, the things that we value, the formula values.
Do the airlines provide feedback on the rankings, especially responding to negative findings?
Yes. All the airlines have negative feedback except one, the one at the top. Okay? Now, since that changes regularly, it varies over time. But for example, American Airlines and US Air, to add to the media coverage, they will, and have, I have one of them framed in my office, they'll go out and buy two double-page ads in the USA Today and the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times at a cost of millions of dollars to promote their number one status. So there's always one airline that's happy, and the others aren't. But they've stopped complaining over time because they can check up on us. You know, they can run the numbers. So, yeah, that's the way it is.
Regarding airline security, can you tell us what the heck went wrong yesterday at Epley?
Well, what happened is something that's probably very easy. It's an offense that's very easy for any of us to commit, and that is you go through the screening, you know, you go through the metal detector, and, you know, they let you pass, and, you know, sometimes they say, okay, you go there, okay? I call it the penalty box, okay? And very simply, a person had passed through security. Her bag had passed through security, but she was told to go to the penalty box. Well, she didn't. She just kept going. So they vacated the terminal and all of the airplanes that were loading and everything and made everybody rescreen. So you know how it is when you get there in Omaha, we're pretty fortunate. The line's only 20, 30 people deep at screening. Can you imagine 700 in line when they're staffed to handle 20 or 30 continuously? So it's something that can happen. Hopefully it doesn't. And, you know, it could be, you know, maybe the person didn't even hear. Maybe the person didn't understand the instruction. And I know I've been sent to the penalty box, and there's nobody around to search me, you know? So, you know, it just happens.
This is going to lead into a little conversation about the Aviation Institute at UNO. This question is, we recently took five flights on as many as five Chinese airlines. They all involved landing or takeoff delays up to an hour long. Are Chinese airport administrators being recruited for training at UNO?
Yes. As a matter of fact, less than 2 weeks ago, we had a delegation from Chengdu University in China visiting the School of Public Administration, which has a relationship with them. They're a very innovative business school. And I suggested to the dean of the school that they consider some type of aviation administration training within their School of Public and Business Administration in China, because there are only five institutions offering aviation training in China, and none really offering, you know, Western business culture. They export a lot of people. But most Chinese aviation officials, as are any other, are civil servants and prior military, okay? and virtually all of their pilots are military trained. So yes, the Chinese could benefit from it. Am I surprised that all of your flights are delayed? No. It's pretty much, you know, like, you know, remember the good old days here when an airline might wait for you if you were delayed? Well, you know, they don't do that anymore here, but maybe they do that in China. I don't know.
But say something a little more about the Aviation Institute at UNO, the number of majors and where they go after they graduate and, okay. You know. And how many such institutes are there around the country?
Okay. The Aviation Institute here was started in 1989, 1990. The idea came from Don Smithy, the executive director of the Omaha Airport Authority, and he excited three of his friends, Charles Durham, Walter Scott, and Mike Harper, to fund the development of the Aviation Institute. And they made a deal with then-Chancellor Del Webber that they would fund the first 4 years of development of the Aviation Institute. And after the end of those 4 years, they would stop funding and it would have to be self-sustaining. I came after the second year. My good friend, a retired colleague from the FAA, Bill Shea, was here for the first 2 years. And this was a novel idea that business and industry would fund the development of an academic program. Mr. Durham and Mr. Harper are avid pilots and aviation enthusiasts. And they were very interested in having aviation education in Omaha. That's how the idea was founded and started. We have since grown to having about 500 to 600 students enrolled in courses at any given time, about 300 majors, minors, graduate students, etc. Most of our students come to the Aviation Institute as undergraduates to go into our pilot training program. Most of our students graduate from our administration program. So there's a transition due to cost, due to ability, due to a number of factors. Where do they go? Well, they go about a third. The pilot ones go to the airlines through various paths to eventually get to be a major airline pilot as their goal. A large percentage, about 10 or 12, go to the military. A lot go to airport administration and airline administration, the business side of it. And it's rather new in airports and airlines to have aviation-trained people. Generally, they get people that don't have backgrounds in aviation. There are only 80 four-year degree-granting programs in aviation in the country. You compare that to, like, you know, accounting, and there's 800, okay? So it's very small. But there's only about a dozen that specialize in aviation administration to the degree we do. So we are somewhat unique.
Do the administrators and as well as the pilots have to go through the Institute in order to get jobs? Do all of them do that?
No, actually a majority don't have to go through an institute like ours because for the longest time, for at least 30 years, a four-year degree in any field has been required of airline pilots. But they have to get all of their pilot ratings. And only about 10 years ago did a majority of commercial airline pilots cross over from not being military trained. Okay? So the former path of getting to the airlines through the military crossed over to be from college programs more than 10 years ago. Now, I think it's about a third come from college aviation programs like ours, and that number's growing. And the military still trains a lot of pilots, but the changing demographic for the military over the past 10 to 20 years is they're keeping more of their pilots all the way through retirement by bonuses, incentives, better living and working conditions. So now most pilots that go in to the military stay until they retire.
What is your opinion of the rule that pilots over 60 years old cannot fly?
The closer I get to 60, the more I like changing that rule. I regard it a lot like driving and the medical aspect of driving. Pilots, airline pilots, have to have a physical examination, very thorough, every 6 months, okay? Very rigid, very thorough, every 6 months. Every 6 months, they have to have a very rigid piloting test in a flight simulator, very scrutinized. So if you can imagine it like a driver being scrutinized medically and performance-wise every 6 months, you can see that abilities will change with age with some people, but with some, they don't. They change. Different people change at different ages. So this kind of universal and historic 60-year rule, it's not really valid with modern science that we have today, modern procedures. Some of the most saving airline accidents of the past were saved by the most experienced captains that were near retirement. So I'm an advocate for it to change.
Here are two similar questions. If you were to choose an airline to fly wherever, which one would you personally choose? And the other one says, do you have a favorite airline?
Yes and yes. Is that enough? You know, I'm routinely asked that by reporters, especially in Washington, D.C., because what airline did you fly to get here? Okay, you see why they want to know? Which airline did I favor to get there to do the rankings? So, I think I'll let the audience guess. I live in Omaha. I go to Washington, D.C. a lot. What do you think's my favorite airline? Midwest. Midwest is not in the rankings. I can't be biased. Midwest is too small to be ranked. So, I like Midwest.
Do you notify the airlines in advance of their ranking?
Our historical practice from the beginning of the national release was to send the airlines, their media office, the pre-press release that says this is when the press release is going to happen at the National Press Club. So they get it a month in advance, and they also get a letter saying the ranking or the full report, which is usually a 50-page report, was mailed or FedExed to them overnight so that they got it the morning that the rankings were announced. We still continue that practice, but we send it to them electronically by email, and we turn on our website with the current report immediately following the press conference. So we have the ability to turn things off and on, so now we're doing a lot of it through the website and through email. And we also email out thousands of the press releases to any media person that's ever contacted us in the past. We've collected their email addresses, so we just send out blankets of emails at the time of the press conference.
In the 17 years since you've been issuing the airline quality report, how have your findings changed over the years? Can you give us a short history? I'm talking about specific airlines. Who's done well, who hasn't, and what have the changes been?
Well, you know, the primary change has been the decrease in what we used to call traditional legacy or major airlines. They've gone down in numbers through mergers, acquisitions, and closings. And as mentioned earlier, I would have to say the main showing now is this grouping of change, where the majors, you know, the Americans, the Uniteds, were at the top, and now they're always in the middle or the lower part of middle. The Southwest, the Alaskas, are at the top. And what we see is the discounters are better meeting their performance expectations and the expectations of consumers than are the traditional airlines. So that's been a big historical change. the regional or commuter airlines have always been at the bottom, but they've gotten worse. They've gotten worse over time. For example, if you fly on a regional airline, the likelihood of your bag being lost is very, very high. Very high. And then the other big finding is that we've gone through cyclical declines where the whole industry, and I didn't really mention that, but one of the side benefits of the airline quality rating is not the individual ranking, but the mean average of the industry. The industry goes up and down in cycles. We're in a five-year down cycle that's still going down. It's still dropping. It's getting worse, sharply worse. And really, we don't see any way that it's going to be turned around as an industry without some type of intervention, because the industry's had 20 years of trying to regulate itself, and we have what we have. And there's not much probability that it will get better unless there's some type of government intervention. A case, an example would be for the bankrupt airlines. They keep dragging down the industry because they're willing to fly us for less than it actually costs just to get the cash. No business can succeed in that type of environment at all. And so one of my suggestions is to change the rules. If an airline goes bankrupt, go out of business. Create room and capacity for the ones that can stay in business. So if we're truly going to be deregulated and have free enterprise, that's one way to do it. The other way is to re-regulate in some way.
Are you talking about the government taking over the airline industry?
Not taking over, but setting some standards, even if they set pricing standards. For example, I'll tell you, you know, we might like it that we could fly to Chicago and back for $89, but it costs more than $89 for us to go to Chicago. I just looked this morning for a fare to Los Angeles and back. $107. It's not reasonable, okay? And the simple application, say, of the federal travel policy that federal government employees travel on, federal employees travel on a pretty much very fair basis. They can fly. It costs, you know, about $200 per ticket, say, each way, going from here to Los Angeles. But you could fly any airline, any time, any change, no penalties, no restrictions, no anything. I think the consumers would tolerate something like the application of the federal government employee travel program to the industry overall. It could be that simple.
Well, there's a question, and you're talking about it right now. What is the future of airline travel in this country, in your estimation?
Managed chaos without change. And those of you that have flown recently will not refute that, probably. You know, I know some people that travel a lot, and they refuse to travel on airlines, say, other than Midwest or Southwest out of Omaha, because they generally get what they expect. And if they have to travel on something else, it's a real decision. And, of course, there's a lot of people that refuse to fly on the regional planes. And, unfortunately, we're getting more and more of those into Omaha. So the future, unless something changes, and we, the consumers, are pretty powerless. And that's why we can't change much, and it's probably got to take government or congressional action.
Is there a shortage of airline pilots, or is there a waiting list?
You know, there's probably not a shortage right now, but there's still good opportunity. The reason there's good opportunity is there's more airplanes flying because of this movement to lower, cheaper, smaller regional jets. So our students are getting into airliner jobs faster today than ever before. There's not a waiting list per se, but students do have to get experience once they graduate our program before the airline job. And it usually takes 1 to 2 years of flying experience to get that airline job. So there's neither a shortage nor a waiting list. Also, there's a perception that the military doesn't need pilots, but they desperately need pilots. And there are fewer students now interested in being military pilots than in the past. So we aggressively allow the military branches to come in and recruit from our student pool to get pilots. And they need them. They need them. All branches of the service need them.
We hear so much about the increasingly crowded skies. What does the future hold? This has to do with airline safety. Maybe you would like to comment on the crowded skies and also the age of the planes.
I'll do aging of airplanes first because it's simpler. And that was a historic problem over the last 20 to 30 years that has improved, and it is getting better. There's more new airliners being deployed right now than ever before. So that's a good situation. That's good for us. Now, most of them are the small regional jets, but a lot of the larger airplanes are being replaced right now at a pretty aggressive rate. So I'd have to say aging aircraft is an issue that's benefiting. And the other part of that question was?
The crowded skies.
The crowded skies are actually getting better due to better technology. Most of you are probably familiar with the Global Positioning Satellite System. And it's recently been augmented by a ground-based system in North America called WAAS, or the Wide Area Augmentation System, so that this technology can allow more airplanes to be in a wider spread zone of coverage than older radar technology would allow. So the skies overall are less crowded, but there's a choke point. And the choke point is bad and getting worse. The choke points are the airports. The choke points are especially at the percentage decreased number of runways that we have. And one of my biggest criticisms of our national policy in the post-9/11 environment, when we had a 3 to 5 year downturn in air travel, the biggest thing that we could have done to help our air traffic, our crowded skies, our everything, was to build more runways, more concrete. That's our big technological downfall right now, worse than air traffic control, worse than anything else. The lack of runway space is our biggest problem. It takes as much runway space to land a small airplane as it does a big airplane, the same amount of distance. You know, it's runway space. The solution is probably going to come, again, through smaller aircraft operating from more airports. So seeing more airports open up to scheduled service and more non-hub service, like Omaha, we have plenty of runways, plenty of space, no capacity issues, no air traffic control issues, no problems in Omaha. The problems are places like Denver, Dallas, Atlanta. Even, you know, they built the great new Denver airport. They'll never have a runway problem. They have runway problems, you know, because of traffic. Omaha has no problems. The solution is, we need more flights from places like Omaha to Washington, directly to Orlando, Miami, direct flights. And getting away from the choked up hub system is a solution that we can move to now.
Are the regionals, which are at the bottom, owned by the majors in the middle?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Increasingly no. Their code share agreements, their aligned partnerships, they're not wholly owned subsidiaries. because the larger carriers don't want to be taken down by the poor performance numbers of the regionals. And that's one of the reasons the number of airlines keeps going up in our ratings, is we have, you know, the Comairs and the America Eagles and all of these now, Continental Express being independent airlines. And they're big. They're really big in terms of the number of people they fly.
What do you foresee in terms of, I'm back to bankruptcies and mergers and so forth, what is the industry going to look like 5 and 10 years from now? Will there be fewer big airlines? You've touched on that.
Well, there's continuing to be mergers and takeovers. We had American take over and close down TWA. We've had most recently US Air and America West merge. That's probably been beneficial, at least from a quality perspective, because US Air was so bad, America West was better. Together, they're mediocre. Will that continue? Yeah, today's environment will probably continue if we take no action, if we allow the bankruptcy laws to stay the same, if we allow the bankrupt airlines to stay the same. 5 to 10 years from now, we won't see much difference. Yes, we'll get some JetBlue ideas in Southwest. Even JetBlue, though, is doing the number one mistake that other airlines do, expand too far, too much, too fast, and they can't handle it, and they have problems. They're seeing that already. You know, Southwest has been very stable because, you know, it's 5 or 10% growth maximum. That's my rule. It's never going to change. Now that they have new management, they're backing away from some of those rules. Their numbers are going down. So, again, without change, I don't see anything better forthcoming.
A question about airline security. Do you feel we have too much airline security right now or too little? What is your biggest concern here?
Well, my biggest concern is not really the security that we, the passengers, go through. Actually, there's better technology available. Once again, it's can the federal government deploy it, you know? Can it go faster? Can we do, you know, the technology exists to do a walk-through type screening system. A technology exists to do a lot of different things for us, the passenger, and that's probably where the focus will be. Probably the biggest problem is getting baggage screened fast enough, secure enough, and to the right place. Again, there's technology to do that, but it's very, very expensive. So I'm more concerned about the expediting security. I think we're very secure. I think we're secure enough right now. But to benefit the system, we need to be faster about our security. And we can do it. It's just a cost-benefit scenario to be examined. And we are very advantaged here in Omaha. If you want to find out how advantaged we are, just go to Baltimore or Chicago Midway and try to come back to the airport, okay, and go through their security. And you won't think twice when you have, you know, the average wait at Omaha Epley is 12 minutes. You know, I've been in waits for 2 hours in other cities. So you have to be cautious where you go. And you can ask the airlines, how long should I plan for security? You know, what are the different conditions? So on and so forth. Be careful when you leave Omaha because we're spoiled here.
What can we expect in the future in the way of airline fares?
Well, I think airline fares should go up as a percentage of income because we are flying too cheap. Too often. I bet the Runyons, when they went to China, paid too little for their tickets to go all the way to China and back. They might disagree with me, but I suspect they probably paid too little, especially if they were on a U.S. carrier. But I don't know for a fact. But I think fares should probably go up in general because, you know, this system we have, you know, where you know, you can have somebody on one flight paying $39 to go to Chicago, and sitting by them, somebody paying $900 because they walked up and had to go right now. It's very inequitable. Again, I go back to the federal pricing model. I think there's opportunity to go up. I think we, the consumers, would pay more to have a better, more pleasant, more reliable, more well-choiced system.
One final question. Despite all the problems, can airline deregulation still be considered a big success?
I think we needed to change from the absolute regulation that we had, and I consider that a big success. But I will tell you that deregulation has not realized the fruits that were envisioned. So I couldn't define it overall as being a success because it didn't realize the competition. It didn't anticipate these bankruptcy issues. It didn't anticipate our now almost inability to build a runway. We can't hardly build a runway or change a runway due to many, many different constraints. So there's so much that wasn't anticipated, but the free enterprise, free business model that was envisioned for deregulation, we never got there, and we probably never can because the way the financial system exists right now.
We're out of time. I want to thank Dr. Bowen for his extremely informative presentation about the performance of the nation's airlines. His study represents a great deal of research, and we appreciate his taking the time to bring it to us. So. And thanks as well to our audience here at the Omaha Press Club for their excellent questions, and also to our KIOS radio audience. And finally, next month's forum will be on June 21st, featuring Film Streams, the two-screen theater coming to 14th and Webster soon. So with that, we are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's speaker was Brent Bowen, the director of the Aviation Institute at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. He spoke on the recently released Airline Quality Ratings Report. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, May 24th, 2007, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. The next forum will be held on Thursday, June 21st at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be Rachel Jacobson, founder and director of the nonprofit independent theater Film Streams. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete noon forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.